From WHYY in Philadelphia, I'm Terry Gross with Fresh Air. Last September, the Canadian city Vancouver opened a safe injection site, a place where heroin addicts can shoot up using clean needles under the supervision of nurses. It's the first such site in North America. The program treats addiction as a health problem, not a criminal problem, with the goals of limiting the spread of HIV and hepatitis C, treating drug-related wounds, preventing overdoses, and referring addicts to drug treatment centers. On today's Fresh Air, we talk with journalist Stephen Quinn of the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation. He's been following the story. Vancouver Mayor Larry Campbell, who opened the site. He's a former narcotics officer and served as British Columbia's chief coroner. And Fiona Gold, a nurse who works with addicts on the streets of Vancouver. That's all coming up on Fresh Air. First, the news.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Corey Flintoff. Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld said today that U.S. plans to contribute some 1,500 American troops as the lead element of an interim stability force for Haiti. Defense officials also denied allegations that U.S. forces coerced former President Jean-Bertrand Aristide to leave Haiti on Sunday. NPR's Eric Westervelt reports from the Pentagon.
Secretary Rumsfeld said the UN-backed International Stability Force for Haiti would likely number fewer than 5,000, with the U.S. supplying some 1,500 troops. Meantime, former President Aristide has apparently told several U.S. Congress members and activists that he was forced into exile by U.S. troops. Secretary Rumsfeld said he was directly involved in the diplomatic maneuvering ahead of Aristide's departure, and he vehemently denied that there was any coercion by U.S. forces.
Certainly not to my knowledge. The Department of Defense was not involved in that process. The Department of State was, and the embassy. And I've heard nothing that would lend any credence whatsoever to the kinds of questions you're asking.
General Richard Myers said only that U.S. Marines might have provided security for Aristide's departure. Eric Westervelt, NPR News, the Pentagon.
The Democratic presidential contenders campaigned today in states that could be crucial in tomorrow's Super Tuesday primaries and caucuses. Senators John Kerry and John Edwards campaigned in Ohio, as did home state Congressman Dennis Kucinich. Kerry and Edwards also held rallies in Georgia, the only southern state in tomorrow's primaries, and one where Edwards has campaigned heavily. Senator Kerry also made an appearance in Maryland today, while activist Al Sharpton was in his home state of New York. 10 states will be choosing candidates tomorrow, with more than 1,100 convention delegates at stake. Iraq's U.S.-appointed governing council has agreed on an interim constitution. NPR's Steve Inskeep says the constitution has some Western-style freedoms that may not necessarily remain after Iraqis take over the government.
The document that's been negotiated over the weekend seems most likely to be the document that will be signed on Wednesday by Iraqi governing council leaders as soon as they get past an important Islamic holiday here in Iraq. Ambassador Paul Bremer, the U.S. civilian administrator, has signaled through his aides that he's very satisfied with this constitution. In fact, he helped to negotiate it, and it does include a number of Western-style rights like the freedom of speech, the freedom of assembly. The question, though, is what exactly happens after June 30th, which is when Iraqis will take over sovereignty of their country once again and prepare for elections sometime around the end of this year, beginning of next year. Iraqis will have the right and the ability to seek to change this constitution if they wish to do so.
NPR's Steve Inskeep in Baghdad. In stocks, the Dow gained 94 to close at 10,678. This is NPR News. The Bush administration is targeting the illegal use of prescription drugs as part of a new national anti-drug strategy. NPR's Don Gagne reports from the White House.
The new drug policy strategy was released by John Walters, who directs the White House Office of National Drug Control Policy. He said that for the first time, there will be a coordinated effort to deal with abuse of prescription drugs, stating that the non-medical use of such drugs has grown at, quote, an alarming rate over the past 10 years, and says Walters presents a serious problem for the country. He notes that emergency room visits resulting from abuse of narcotic pain relievers have more than doubled since 1995. The administration says it will increase the number of monitoring programs in states across the country with the goal of improving the tracking of individuals who are getting similar prescriptions from multiple physicians and to investigate and crack down on illegal pharmacies operating over the internet. Don Gagne, NPR News, the White House.
The California Supreme Court ruled today that a Roman Catholic charity must include birth control coverage in its health care coverage for workers, even though it opposes contraception on moral grounds. The High Court said the group Catholic Charities is not a religious employer because it offers secular services and employs non-Catholics. Like other businesses, the court said it must offer its employees contraception coverage in its health plan as long as the health plan includes prescription drug coverage. The Catholic Church itself is in a different category. As a religious employer, the church is exempt from the requirement. In stocks today, the NASDAQ Composite Index gained nearly 28 points, or about 1.4%, to close at 2057. Corey Flintoff, NPR News, Washington.
The NPR Shop introduces All Songs Considered 4, the newest compilation of music heard on NPR programs at npr.org.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. In dealing with heroin addicts, the Canadian city Vancouver is trying an experimental program that would be unthinkable in most American cities and would be political suicide for any American politician who supported it. But it's a program that Vancouver's mayor, Larry Campbell, campaigned on. Last September, he opened the city's safe injection site. It's a storefront where heroin addicts can inject their drugs with clean needles in the presence of nurses without risking arrest. The goal is to limit the spread of HIV and other infections, prevent overdoses, counsel addicts, and refer them to drug treatment centers. The site is part of the city's policy to treat addiction as a health problem. Vancouver is the first city in North America to open a legal safe injection site, but similar sites are operating in approximately 50 cities in Germany, Switzerland, the Netherlands, Spain, and Australia. Later, we'll hear from Mayor Larry Campbell and from a nurse who treats addicts on the streets of Vancouver and supervises their injections. First, we're going to hear from journalist Stephen Quinn, who covers City Hall in Vancouver for the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation and has been reporting on the safe injection site. I asked him to describe the site.
From the street, it's fairly anonymous. When you walk up to it, you may not know what it is. It's a street-level storefront in a renovated heritage building. It's probably the nicest-looking thing on the block. When you walk in, there's a counter where sort of reception area, and the back room of the site itself is 12 stainless steel carrels, sort of like library carrels you might see in a university library. That's where the injections take place. It's clean. It is functional. There's a room where people can sit for a while after they've injected. They'll get some medical attention there if they need it. There are a number of staff and nurses. It looks like a medical facility. It looks like a clinic of some kind.
What is the block like?
The block is notorious in the city of Vancouver. Some people, police, for instance, refer to it simply as the 100. It's the 100 block of East Hastings Street. And the center of the drug trade in the city has been the corner of Main and Hastings, which is at the heart of a neighborhood called the Downtown East Side. The Downtown East Side is, well, it has the distinction of being Canada's poorest postal code. Or zip code. A lot of people down there, a majority of people are infected with HIV, with hepatitis C. A majority of the population lives in these small little residential hotel rooms that welfare pays for. The block itself has a lot of vacant storefronts in it. And a lot of bars that are underneath the hotels, some pawn shops and some little grocery stores that don't really have much on the shelves. But the block has been, in the past, the center of all drug activity in the city. Now, police have made a very concerted effort to try to crack down on that over the last year. They've had a special project going down there where they doubled or tripled the number of officers who walk that beat. They park a police cruiser up at the top of the block near a place called the Carnegie Center. The Carnegie Center is a sort of library and community center that used to be just crowded with drug dealers. In the middle of the day, you could stand on the stairs there and watch 20 crack cocaine deals go down a minute in front of you, and police really didn't do much to stop it. The idea was always, or the belief was always, that police were happy as long as the drug trade was contained to that one block. But since the crackdown, a lot of the drug dealers have moved elsewhere, and the block has actually been cleaned up a lot. Residents down there will sure tell you that they're happy with it.
It sounds like no one is objecting to the safe injection site because it's attracting drug users or because it's a bad thing for the neighborhood. It sounds like the neighborhood is already in really bad shape and that the drug users already live there.
That's right. And the police crackdown sort of coincided with the opening of the safe injection site. In fact, it happened just a few months before, but in preparation for the opening of the supervised injection site, there's kind of a zero tolerance policy on drug dealing around the safe injection site. Police just don't want people standing outside the door selling heroin there for people to take inside and shoot up. So police are quite proud of the fact that they've cleaned the block up. In truth, you don't have to walk very far around the corner to find out where all of the drug dealers have gone. They're just hanging around in the adjacent alleys and the streets around the neighborhood. Some have moved to other parts of the downtown. But the neighborhood, if you just talk to people on the street down there, there's more legitimate activity returning to that block and returning to the neighborhood. There are a couple of cafes now where people are actually sitting on the sidewalk having coffee. And if you talk to those people, most people are happy with the attention, that the extra police attention that the safe injection site has brought.
How is the identity of the drug users protected when they go to the supervised injection site? Protected so that they're not arrested in a crackdown in 6 weeks?
There was a lot of concern about that from the beginning. There's a surveillance camera, for instance, on the way into the injection site, and a lot of people didn't like the idea of being photographed. They register when they go in. A lot of these people can't provide any identification, so sometimes registration is simply a first name, and then they probably rely on staff recognition to a great deal after that. There are 2,000 people are registered users of the site now, and the staff is a fairly regular staff. So they have a pretty good idea of who is coming and going. But that was what made a lot of drug users apprehensive about using this site in the first place, was that it was government-run and government-operated through the provincial government and the health board, and they didn't like the idea of losing their anonymity, or certainly the anonymity that they had when they were injecting in the back lanes. They didn't like the idea that this was something official and something that was government sanctioned. It seems most people have got over that now. The site itself has done a great job of recruiting people from the neighborhood, people who are former drug users, people who have worked with drug advocacy groups. So you can walk in there and recognize a lot of the faces that you would see on the street in the downtown East Side as people who are now employees of the site.
Is the medical staff comprised of nurses? Are there doctors on the staff too?
Nurses. There are a total of 16 nurses on staff, and they're all trained in dealing with injection drug users. They're trained to deal with people with problems like HIV and hepatitis C. They spend a lot of time looking after wounds. A lot of people walk into the site and they have open sores or untreated wounds. And if someone is sitting in the chill-out room after injecting, a nurse may try to help them dress their wound or talk to them about taking care of it or that sort of thing. And there are still street nurses working down there as well who are walking up and down the back lanes and trying to get people into the supervised injection site, or even in the back alleys, helping people inject safely in the back alleys. Again, it sounds a little unusual to have a nurse walking around the back alleys of a city doing that, but that's exactly what they do.
You know, the program, the kind of program we're talking about, a supervised injection site with nurses making sure that addicts don't kill themselves, you know, by overdosing, and making sure that they have, like, clean needles so that they don't get HIV. This kind of thing is so unlikely to happen anytime in the near future in the United States. And it would probably be considered political suicide for any politician who tried to introduce such a program. What was the public reaction when the mayor of Vancouver introduced the program? And do you think he did an effective job in explaining his reasons for introducing it?
Well, what was interesting was that this wasn't a sitting mayor who introduced the supervised injection site. This was a mayor who actually campaigned on it and got an unprecedented number of votes, and who the voter turnout for the last civic election was bigger than it's been in 80 years in this city. It was an issue that that he campaigned on vigorously, and it was all to do with changing the mindset of people, telling people that injection drug users aren't criminals, that they're people who have an illness, that they're people who have an addiction, and that this is something that should be treated as a medical problem and not as a criminal problem. The symptoms of the drug trade end up being criminal, in that people are breaking into cars to get the $10 they need to get their next hit. But the addicts themselves are people with a medical problem. And he hammered away at that for a long time and spent a lot of time selling it, and it seems to have been successful. You don't hear a lot of people now saying that this was a bad decision, that this was a bad idea.
Was there an organized opposition when the idea was first proposed?
There was. There was a lot of fear from the Chinatown community, which is nearby, which is just a couple of blocks away. And Chinatown has always had a very dodgy relationship with the downtown East Side. They've hired their own private security force to sort of patrol the storefronts, to more or less push drug users out of the neighborhood. There was a really concerted effort by a merchants association there to fight the supervised injection site. There were a number of downtown East Side business owners. There's a part of the neighborhood that's being gentrified, so you get a lot of, you know, architects' offices and designers, and that sort of thing has moved into the neighborhood. They were opposed to the safe injection site to begin with. If they are still opposed, they are no longer vocal about it. We don't hear any opposition about it. But those people, the Chinatown Merchants Association, there was a lot of opposition to begin with, yeah.
Is there anything that has been particularly controversial about the supervised injection site since it's open?
Not a whole lot. If there's one thing I can point at, it's that the number of overdoses that they've recorded at the site has become a little bit of a political football. People use the number of overdoses as evidence that lives have been saved in there. I think the number we had for the first 2 months the site was open was about 25 overdoses. That doesn't mean that every one of those people would have died had they not had immediate medical attention. Sometimes an overdose intervention is nothing more than nudging somebody on a shoulder and saying, "Hey, are you okay there, Dave? Are you with me?" They count that as an injection intervention, but it doesn't mean that someone would have died as a result of an overdose. The mayor's office likes to say, well, about a quarter of those 25 people would have, you know, may have succumbed. The health authority says it's closer to two or three people. It really isn't that many per month that actually require medical attention or they get moved out by ambulance. It's very rare that an ambulance gets called to the site because the nurses there know what they're doing, and it's very rare that police get called to the site. So the number of lives saved potentially has become a bit of a political football.
Are there numbers that have been published yet about how many people use the supervised injection site each day, or any projections of how many people have been saved from contracting HIV because of the clean needles available at the site?
Well, none of those numbers have been released yet. They're waiting. After 6 months of the site operating, they'll release some of the preliminary figures. But again, those probably won't be very telling. Remember, we've had clean needles available in the downtown East Side since 1988. Right now, they distribute about 3 million needles a year to addicts, and that's either through the storefront offices. There's actually a table set up on the sidewalk where addicts can walk up and get clean needles. There's a van that drives around the back lanes handing clean needles out to people. The street nurses distribute clean needles. So whether those rates of infection will actually drop and whether any of that is attributable to the supervised injection site, I think they're going to have a hard time figuring out those numbers. The number of injection deaths hasn't actually dropped, or a number of overdose deaths, rather, hasn't actually dropped in, I believe, the last 3 months of 2002. We had about 18 people die of overdoses. In 2003, when the site was open for 3 months, we had about 16 or 18, again, just about the same number of people die in the neighborhood of overdose deaths. So there hasn't been any tremendous drop in that either. Again, it's all of the figures are really preliminary. And this is a three-year trial project. Health Canada, which is one of the partners in this, has funded the clinical study for 3 years. So they'll probably make some determination at the end of 3 years.
Is there any breakdown that you've seen so far in terms of gender or ethnicity, race, in terms of who's showing up at the safe injection site?
Well, the one thing the health authority says that it's surprised to see is the number of women who have registered as users of the site. Of the 2,000 people who have registered as users, 40% of them are women. And that's proportionally, that's way more women than live in the downtown east side. And they say this is good for a couple of reasons. The first being that they're, putting more women in contact with health services, which is great. But secondly, because when two people are in a back alley injecting, inevitably it's the woman who ends up getting the needle second. And they're much more likely to contract whatever the disease is of the first person on the needle. The health people say they call it second on a needle. So they're really happy to see the number of women registered in the site be as high as 40%. And, they're saying that that by itself is a success even before any actual figures come out.
My guest is journalist Stephen Quinn of the CBC. We'll talk more about Vancouver's safe injection site after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Stephen Quinn of the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation. He's been covering Vancouver's new safe injection site. Is there any way of measuring if the supervised injection site has had any impact on crime? Even if you argue that addicts aren't criminals, they're sick. They need medical help. They're addicted. Many addicts steal in order to get money for the drugs that they need to buy, and a supervised injection site doesn't eliminate the need to get money to buy the drugs.
No, it doesn't. And that's the one part of this that police don't like. Virtually all petty crime and when I say petty crime, I mean most of it is people breaking into automobiles and stealing CDs and whatever happens to be visible in the car. Most petty crime is driven by the drug trade. Break and enters to houses are driven by the drug trade. Certainly, most shoplifting. If you walk into any of those bars in the downtown east side, you can buy virtually anything you want from somebody sitting at one of the tables. That's definitely been a downside. And it's identified a problem, which is now we've got harm reduction, but there still isn't adequate drug treatment. And so while the supervised injection site may be referring two or three people a day to drug treatment, a place where they can go get clean, those facilities just aren't there. The number of people who want treatment far exceeds the number of treatment spaces available. And ultimately, the goal is to get people off the drugs, to cure people's addictions, or to at least put them into remission. And that hasn't happened. And a lot of people who are the victims of break and enters, while they may be sympathetic with what the mayor's been trying to do, there's still a lot of frustration that these crimes are happening because people need money for drugs. And that's everybody in the city feels that. The crime rate has by no means dropped when it comes to petty crime. If anything, it's got worse.
Do you think this program is likely to continue after Mayor Campbell leaves office?
That's a good question. It was Mayor Campbell's predecessor, a person by the name of Philip Owen, who actually got the ball rolling on this. And I don't know how this can go backwards now. It seems to be so widely accepted by the public only because it's not that big an issue for the other people who live in this city, people who have no contact with that neighborhood at all. I don't know how you can go back. And I'd be very interested to see the results that come out of this, because I don't know how those results are going to be interpreted. What's probably even more controversial than this is there's a free heroin trial that's scheduled to begin in a little while, giving addicts, actually providing them with free heroin. So this is going to pale in comparison to that study, when all they're doing here is providing people a place to shoot up safely.
Where will that study be conducted, and what is the rationale behind it?
The Kaiser Foundation, in fact, is funding it, and it's being done through Health Canada in three cities in the country: Toronto, Montreal, and Vancouver. They haven't found a location for the heroin trial yet, but it's going to include about 300 people. 150 of them will be given pharmaceutical-grade heroin to inject along with methadone, and I think there's a control group that will receive just methadone. And this is a study that's supposed to take place, I think it's over 2 years. And there's, again, been a lot of opposition about that. It's bad enough that you're giving people some place to shoot their drugs. My God, do you now have to give them the drugs to shoot? But the idea is that for people for whom methadone may not be an appropriate treatment, maybe putting them on heroin maintenance is a better treatment if you can supervise the dosage, if you can supervise the injection, and if you can, the idea is to see if it leads to any better health outcome, I guess that's the phrase they would use, 2 years down the road.
Are other Canadian cities keeping their eyes on the supervised injection site program in Vancouver and considering trying a program like that?
I would imagine they are, and I know that other cities here, of course, in Canada have needle exchanges, but nobody has gone as far as Vancouver has. I think people are waiting to see some of the results. Again, this is the city going out on a limb here. I mean, this has not been tried in North America before, and people have all of the fears that you asked about earlier. Is it going to attract drug dealers? Are you enabling people rather than helping them? Are you, you know, creating a drug market? Is crime going to increase? I think people are waiting for all of those answers to come out of Vancouver. I think the mayor, because of who he is, you know, he's a former RCMP officer. He's walked that beat as a drug cop. He's become a coroner. He's a little bit of a folk hero. I don't know if you're aware that there's a TV series here modeled on his life. There's a television series about a chief coroner who investigates the deaths of people who have died in strange circumstances. He's a little bit of a folk hero that way. And I think a lot of, I don't know that other cities have a leader who is willing to take those sorts of risks.
Stephen Quinn, thank you very much for talking with us.
You're very welcome.
Stephen Quinn covers City Hall for the CBC. We'll meet the mayor of Vancouver and talk more about the safe injection site in the second half of the show. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.
Major funding for Fresh Air is provided by Barnes & Noble, publishers of Barnes & Noble Classics, enduring works of literature in newly annotated editions, available at Barnes & Noble stores and online at bn.com. From the listeners of WHYY in Philadelphia, where Fresh Air is produced, and by the Sundance Channel, presenting Tanner 88, an original series from creators Robert Altman and Gary Trudeau, new episodes every Tuesday at 9 p.m., This is NPR, National Public Radio.
Coming up, Larry Campbell, the mayor of Vancouver, who opened the city's safe injection site last September. He's a former narcotics officer and served as British Columbia's chief coroner. And we talk with nurse Fiona Gold, who treats addicts on the streets of Vancouver. This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Today we're talking about an experimental program in the Canadian city Vancouver, which is treating heroin addiction as a health problem, not a criminal problem. In September, the city opened a safe injection site, a storefront location where addicts can get clean needles and inject in the presence of a nurse. The goal is to prevent overdoses as well as the spread of HIV and other infections, and to counsel addicts and refer them for treatment. Vancouver's mayor, Larry Campbell, who opened the site, is a former narcotics officer. He also served as British Columbia's chief coroner. I asked Mayor Campbell to explain the legal parameters of the program. Although the drugs remain illegal in the city, users do not risk arrest at the safe injection site.
Basically, this is set up under a medical supervision. This is a scientific study that is allowed under all of the agreements that countries sign with regards to drugs. So that's the first thing. The second thing is that we believe in what's called the four pillars, which is harm reduction, prevention, treatment, and enforcement. And the police have worked very well with us. We have a very progressive police force, a progressive police chief. And so, in fact, in many cases, they're directing addicts who are shooting up in alleys to go to the supervised injection site. You do not want to be dealing in the immediate vicinity, however, or you will suffer the consequences of the law.
Can you explain a little more of the understanding that your office, the mayor's office, has with the police about how to enforce drug laws now that you have this program in effect?
Well, I'm also the chair of the police board.
Uh-huh.
So it's an understanding that we're going to be pragmatic about what is going on here. We don't ignore enforcement, but quite frankly, prior to this coming into place, we did not arrest people for simple possession of heroin or cocaine or crack unless there was some other reason for doing it. For instance, you may have a warrant outstanding or you may be committing another offense because there were just too many people. You couldn't do it. We'd have no police left on the street. We're carrying forward with that. We're seeing certainly the people where we've set up the injection site. The police have put in a program to deal with drug dealing, and it's a much quieter, probably much safer, and certainly more sightly place than it was 4 months ago.
Do you and the police make a big distinction between drug users and drug dealers and how you enforce the law?
Yes. A drug user is somebody who's suffering from a disease. A drug dealer is somebody who's peddling death.
So,
and will be arrested and will be charged.
So the police are much more likely to go after the dealers than the users?
Oh, there's no question.
And while we're on the subject of the police, what kind of protection do the police offer in the area of the supervised injection site? I mean, do the police have protection for the health workers who are there and for the other addicts?
Well, there is no need for protection. We haven't had one incident of either violence or anything like that. I mean, there's a misguided thinking that addicts are violent. They're not violent at all. So that hasn't been an issue. It's not an issue at any of the other injection sites around the world. So it's not that the health. In fact, there are no police inside the healthcare facility.
Before you became the mayor of Vancouver, you worked as a narcotics officer, and then you served as British Columbia's chief coroner. How did
That's
your
correct.
Experiences in those areas affect your point of view now about safe injection sites, supervised injection sites?
Well, I was a narcotics officer in the Royal Canadian Mounted Police first, so I viewed drugs from a criminal point of view when I became coroner and chief coroner. I had to take a different view that my job then was not to enforce the law, but was rather to keep people alive. And so I was able to take a look at this and come to the conclusion that this is a medical problem and has to be treated as such. And so I suppose I had a significant change in thinking.
When you were a narcotics agent, did you believe at that time that a law enforcement approach to drugs was effective?
Yes. Yes, I did.
What made you think that then?
I think because it was a different time and a different place. If we could get back to, for instance, the early 70s, if we get back to the level that we had at that time, we'd probably, as a society, be feeling very good. But the disease and the problems associated with drug addiction have just ballooned, have mushroomed. I mean, we've gone from heroin to cocaine, crystal meth, cocaine and heroin as speedballs. It's an entirely different world now. Enforcement simply cannot deal with it. I'll give you an example. In the early 70s, we seized a kilogram of heroin at the airport. There'd be panic on the streets of Vancouver. It would affect the distribution so much. Recently, we took 100 kilos off, and we didn't miss a beat. In fact, more people died after that. The heroin on the street at one point was close to 100% pure, which says to me there's a huge amount of drugs out there. They're not even stepping on it. So the type of drugs, the type of people, the number of people have changed dramatically. And in many cases, we've allowed that to happen. We've given up on parts of our cities, just said, well, that's the way it always is, and given up on them. I'm not prepared to give up on any part of my city.
Do you think that Vancouver has had a proportionately large drug problem, larger than other cities of a comparable size?
At one time, we had probably the highest death rate in North America.
Why do you think that is?
From overdoses. Well, we're on the Pacific. We have easy access to Asian heroin. We are also a port city where you can get, cocaine comes up from the south. Methamphetamine is readily available. It's because we've always had drugs in this city. It's a port city. It's always had it. Why did we get to that point? I think because of the large number of addicts, the purity of the drug, and just a general, general disregard for the area where it was being, where the majority of these deaths took place.
Are you worried that now that you have this supervised injection site in which you can legally get medical supervision while you shoot up, that other addicts will be attracted to Vancouver and in the long run you'll have a bigger problem on your hands?
No, there's no evidence. The scientific evidence actually is the opposite. There is no honeypot effect to a supervised injection site. We aren't giving out drugs, so... if you have a 5-block radius, that's about it. And so we know that people won't move to... They don't come just for a safe injection site. They'll use it if it's there and within their geography, but they will not move to it.
What about tourism? Afraid it's going to hurt tourism?
No. Why would it hurt tourism? In fact, we're seeing a tremendous change in this neighborhood. It is the most historical part of Vancouver. I mean, it's where Vancouver started. It's the heart of Vancouver.
My guest is the mayor of Vancouver, Larry Campbell. We'll talk more about the city's new safe injection site after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is the mayor of Vancouver, Larry Campbell. Last September, he opened the city's safe injection site. It's part of the city's policy of treating addiction as a health problem. From your vantage point in Vancouver, how does the U.S. approach to dealing with drug addiction look to you?
It's a failure. There's no other way to describe it. You have a prison system, which is a growth industry. You have a very disproportionate number of people in prison for drug offenses. And enforcement doesn't work. We know that. By itself, it simply does not work. Just look at the facts. I mean, it doesn't work.
I think one of the theories here behind the criminal penalties for drug possession, it's partly this, the fear that drug addicts may not be violent people, but they may resort to violence to get the money to score the drugs. What are your perceptions as a former narcotics officer about the connection between drug use and crime and about the connection between drug users and needing to get the money to purchase the drugs? And drugs are not cheap usually. Heroin,
there's no
anyway.
Question. Yeah. I mean, we have a tremendous property crime in Vancouver that is driven by drug addicts.
Mm-hmm.
And that there's a direct correlation between drug addiction and crime. And that's why at the end of the day, you want to be getting people into treatment. You want to be getting them off of the drugs in whatever manner that may be. Just say no works for about 10%. I know that 10% will respond to opiate treatment, heroin maintenance. And in the middle is 80% who are responding to methadone, to counseling, any number of different methods. But to just throw them in jail does nothing. What do? You have an addict that goes to jail, then they come out of jail, and they start all over again. So unless you want an industry of jails, then... You need to do something different. And jails are, to be pragmatic, jails are tremendously expensive compared to treatment. Jails are tremendously expensive compared to prevention. This whole thing is about, not only helping the addicts from a medical point of view, but also helping society. I mean, what's an addict cost us in stolen property? And we can deal with that.
Part of your four pillars is treatment for drug addiction, helping people to get off of drugs. What are you doing in that area now?
We don't have near enough treatment that is recognizable. The one area that I'm doing is trying to get a catalog of all the treatment within the province. But there is a recognition that we don't have enough. That it has to be on demand. When an addict's ready to go into treatment, we have to be able to have that treatment there because it's a fleeting thing for them. It's a part of the disease, and so we need to get treatment on demand, and that's one of the things that we're pushing, of course, with the federal and provincial governments.
I don't know if you plan on having a political career when your term as mayor is up, but do you think that the work you're doing with drugs now, particularly the supervised injection site, do you think that will prove to be good or bad for your political career?
I don't plan on having a political career because I don't consider myself a politician. If I never ran again, I've succeeded. There are people alive because of the work of Philip Owen before me and myself and my council and the citizens of Vancouver. This is just one thing that's the right thing to do. And so I don't plan on, I don't have any huge political ambitions.
Are you confident that this program will continue when you leave office?
Yes.
Why are you so confident of that?
Because it works. And any politician loves to have something that works.
And how important is this program in your larger plan as mayor? Is this like just another thing, or is this toward the top of your priorities?
Well, I think probably the two things that were the largest issues during the election was the drug use and transit. It's critical to my trying to help the downtown east side become a healthy and prosperous place for all the citizens who live there now, not necessarily those who move in. And so certainly helping with the drug addiction, the issues of poverty, which are also associated with drug addiction, are critical to the vitality of this neighborhood. So it would be a linchpin.
How finally will you judge the success of this program? How will you finally evaluate it?
It's actually being evaluated as we go along. It's a 3-year project. It's being independently evaluated on many number of criteria. I suppose the ones that I would be interested in are the drop in disease, drop in deaths, a drop in crime, and a rise in the livability of the area. And I think that those are all measurable and will all be looked at during this period. But there's many other criteria that are being studied scientifically.
Have you spoken to any of the addicts who use the supervised injection site?
I've spoken to a couple of them, not very many of them. I've spoken to thousands of addicts before that. I sort of stayed out of the way of it because I don't want it to become a political. For the first couple of days we had camera crews camped outside it and that, and now they've gone away. And it's a quiet success, and that's really how it should be. I see it the same as a cancer clinic, for instance. It's simply a medical facility to help people with an illness.
I'll tell you, if I was an addict, I'm not sure I'd want to be introduced to the mayor.
Oh, they love meeting me. I'm a great guy.
No, you don't necessarily welcome being introduced as an addict to somebody who represents the law.
I don't judge them, and I don't represent the law. They don't mind meeting me because I recognize that they have a disease, they have an illness. Mm-hmm. They're not stigmatized to me. I have no idea how they became there, but I do know this. They didn't wake up. They weren't born with the idea that someday they'd be a junkie. So, you know, for whatever reason, they became addicted. Sometimes it's because they made a bad decision to try drugs. But, you know, thousands of people try drugs and don't get addicted. I mean, it's an addiction is an illness, and it can take many forms.
If you could go back again to your years working as a narcotics officer, if you could go back knowing then what you know now, would you have changed your approach to dealing with drug users?
I wouldn't have been a narcotics officer.
Go on.
There still is a role for a narcotics officer. I don't know that I would have been there in that position. I didn't want you to think that I didn't enjoy being a narcotics officer, because I very much enjoyed all of my time in the Mounted Police. I think that probably now, when I look back, if it was now, I would be looking, if I was a narcotics officer, I'd be going out and getting a degree in accounting so I can chase the money. I think that that's where we should be going. I would be going out and finding out how all of these major crime rings are interconnected, and not worrying so much about what's going on the street, but taking it off at the top. That's always the aim of every narcotics officer, but now I think it's very much more complicated.
Well, Mayor Campbell, thank you very much for talking with us.
Okay, thank you.
Mayor Larry Campbell is the mayor of Vancouver. Coming up, we hear from a nurse who works with addicts on the streets of Vancouver. This is Fresh Air. The nurses who work with Vancouver's safe injection site are not giving interviews now, but we talked with a nurse who does similar work. Fiona Gold is a street nurse with the AIDS and Sexually Transmitted Diseases Prevention Program run by the Center for Disease Control of British Columbia, the Canadian province that Vancouver is located in. She's been with the program for 8 years, 4 as a street nurse, 4 as a team leader. She still works with addicts on the streets of Vancouver 2 nights a week. I asked her to describe a typical night.
The Wednesday nights, I usually buddy up with drug users in a certain part of Vancouver. It's the east part of Vancouver. And we head out. They have a needle exchange route that they do. And I go along as the nurse. And it's very interesting. I mean, we just run into users in back alleys, you know, hanging around the bus stations, that kind of thing. Very often, I think what's really important in working as a street nurse is that there's a lot of consistency, that you're just out there the same night, you're there again and again, and any outreach worker knows this, but that you're there again and again, because very often, I think working with people who are struggling with addiction, you have to gain a certain amount of trust. And that trust comes from just being really straightforward, really honest with people. I mean, in our program, we work very much with a client-centered approach, so we really allow clients to determine what they want to do with respect to their health care.
Now, do you do the kind of work that the nurses do in the safe injection site where you will help an addict find a vein or safely shoot up?
Absolutely. I mean, that's part of building a rapport. And our primary concern here is health. And I think that's where you know, that was the big shift that happened in Vancouver. People had to stop viewing this as a criminal issue, but really start viewing it as a health issue. And we will sit down and we will say, look, you know, you're missing all over the place. You've got abscesses through the yin-yang. And I mean, some people's arms were just unbelievable in the late 1990s. I mean, as a nurse coming from the hospital, I was horrified at what I was seeing on the street. I was seeing people with enormous holes in their arm, so you could see the bone, you know, and I just really felt, you know, we have to help people do this as safely as possible. And in that, you build a relationship with that person, and that relationship does lead into a day where that person says, you know, I've got to get off this stuff. Can you help me? Can you help me find a detox bed? Can you help me find a treatment facility?
What can you do that will help prevent an addict's arm turning into, you know, lots of abscesses?
A big hole.
To prevent that big hole with the bone sticking out.
Yeah. What we usually do is we just encourage people really to cook their drugs. That's number one. So to take a spoon, put their drug in a spoon, add water, and to cook it with a lighter. And what that does is it just kills the bacteria. Then we hand out filters. And when they draw this solution up into the needle, we say, use the filter because it will filter out any of the cut the dealers might have used. I mean, sometimes dealers use talcum powder or gypsum, or there's all kinds of things that people use to make the drugs go further.
What are some of the other addiction-related wounds or health problems that you can treat meeting somebody on the street?
Well, you know, when you think of addiction related, you think right away the real basics. Are they eating enough? Do they have a place to sleep? Those are big, huge ones. Then in terms of, you know, actual sharing needles or, you know, drawing water out of puddles. I mean, as soon as you have needle sharing going on, you have risks for HIV, for hepatitis C, and other bloodborne pathogens. And this is quite common. You know, people will inject a little bit and then they'll give it to their girlfriend, you know, or the other way around. And you get the transmission of bloodborne pathogens that way. You also end up in situations where if people have not cooked it, they're also injecting a kind of bacteria. And this can be, I mean, we just had this situation where people were drawing water out of puddles in alleys. And this water, I mean, there's garbage containers there, so on and so forth. And they're injecting this into their body. And so the concern there is, of course, that the person will go into a state of sepsis.
Is it ever hard to continue standing by a person when you've seen them blow their chances to get off of the drug, and when you've seen them, you know, get deeper and deeper into addiction or crime?
No, for me, that's not really an issue, because I think, you know, that very much the, you know, getting more street involved, getting more into crime, that kind of thing, it is all fueled by the addiction. And that's a part of it. I mean, a part of it is, And this is very much the philosophy of the safe injection site. You know, I might not be able to get you as a drug user from the street today into a detox bed because it's way too freaky for you to go directly from a street into a detox or a treatment program. And so maybe we need to come up with some middle steps. And some of those middle steps do involve falling off the wagon and involve maybe accessing a safe injection site. And really through accessing a safe injection site or something like that, you can develop a rapport with the people, the nurses, the other workers that are working in the injection site. And through that rapport, really begin to develop a relationship back to the healthcare system.
Do you ever feel at risk working on the streets?
You know, we always try and buddy up. So we're either with another member of the community. We do a lot of collaborative work with different community organizations. So usually we have somebody with us. You know, sometimes the nurses go out in twos or the nurses go out with a healthcare worker, or we're buddied up with somebody from the community. And the only situations where I've really felt uncomfortable is when there's a mental health component and a lot of drugs on top of that. I've been in a couple of situations where I thought, yeah, I have to get out of here.
And have any of the nursing organizations taken a stand on the street nursing program?
Yeah, they have. The Registered Nurses Association here of British Columbia, they basically said that supervising injections for the purposes of education and health promotion was completely within the scope of nursing practice. And that was actually a very strong statement that came out from the Nursing Association, and I think a statement that really pushed Health Canada forward.
The street nurse program that you work with started about 16 years ago. And the safe injection site in the city of Vancouver just started a few months ago. How has the initiation of the safe injection site affected your work on the street?
You know, it's really quite amazing. We really see a huge decrease in people injecting in the lanes. And I can't tell you how happy that makes me. You know, just not to see people like cowering behind garbage containers, you know, putting needles in their arms. And so that's been a really positive step. And we're also hearing from users on the street that they do like accessing the injection site.
Fiona Gold, thank you very much for talking with us.
Oh, you're more than welcome.
Fiona Gold is a team leader with the AIDS and Sexually Transmitted Diseases Prevention Street Nurse Program, which is run by the Center for Disease Control of British Columbia. Last week, NPR ran a series about heroin use in the U.S. You can hear those stories and get information about drug treatment resources on NPR's website, npr.org. Fresh Air's executive producer is Danny Miller. Our interviews and reviews are produced and edited by Amy Sallet, Phyllis Myers, Naomi Person, Monique Nazareth, Anne-Marie Baldonado, Patty Leswing, Ian Chillog, and Jessica Chu. I'm Terry Gross.
CDs and transcripts of Fresh Air are available from Burrells at 1-877-213-7374. Support for Fresh Air comes from the listeners of WHYY in Philadelphia, where Fresh Air is produced, and by the Sundance Channel, presenting Tanner 88, an original series from creators Robert Altman and Gary Trudeau. New episodes every Tuesday at 9 p.m. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
The Sopranos starts its new season on Sunday. On the next Fresh Air, we talk about the new season with the creator of The Sopranos, David Chase. And we hear from Robert Wydy, an executive producer and director of the Larry David series, Curb Your Enthusiasm, which is wrapping up its fourth season on HBO. I'm Terry Gross. Join us for the next Fresh Air.